Hello, and welcome to Grace Unscripted, where we share stories of people in and around Grace Church without any script, just real, raw conversations about life change through Jesus. I'm your host, Audrey Wallace, and today our guest is Tia Smith. Tia and her husband, Tyler, are a wonderful part of Grace Church, and something that stood out to me in her story, and I don't know, I think you'll probably be able to hear it, was just the smile that she carried. And you couldn't see this, but she had this bright coral sweater on, and she was just like shining across the microphone from me. And that smile that she had as she shared the story, which has some really hard parts, has some deep and dark things that she's gone through and healed through and is continuing to work through. And now she's helping others through those things as well with that joy that surpasses understanding. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Unscripted.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we've already had some fun here just in chatting. And, you know, this is the first time you and I have ever sat down. We've been in all kinds of communities and meetings and serving together in all those different ways. But time for Audrey and Tia to get to know each other.
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. So tell me about you. Tell me about where you grew up. And I wonder if our paths have crossed much in our lives. I'm just curious to hear about you.
Yeah. So I grew up in small town Ripman, Ohio.
Okay. They have good apples and cider. And
we do. Yeah, the best. Although there's two orchards, so it depends on who you're friends with.
Is there a hometown battle? Is there any kind of rivalry there?
I don't know if it's a rivalry necessarily, but I was friends with the Ballman. So
okay.
I grew up going
very
to
partial.
Ballman's orchard.
Yes.
Like that was the one that we always went to. And even now, it's like when you go in there, it's like coming home.
Yes.
You know, everybody knows you. And so it's just, it's fun. But yeah, so I grew up there. I went to school there. Graduated from there. I met Tyler there. He was my high school sweetheart. So he was out of school when we finally started dating. I was still a sophomore in high school.
But the parents loved that.
Yeah, I've been with him longer than I have been without at this point in my life, which is wild because I'm only 36.
Yeah.
But it's been magical.
Wow. Okay, so what did you get into when you were a kid? Did your family go to church? Were you involved in activities?
So, no. My parents did not go to church, but they never stopped us from going to church.
Okay.
And so I think Jeff talks a lot about how, like, you don't know the seeds that you're planting. And so I feel like I was really lucky in that my seeds were planted really young. And they were watered and tended to. But I don't think that I was ready to really come home to Jesus until I was an adult in my life. So I would go to church. My friends were apostolic, so I would go to, like, the apostolic church, mostly for their delicious lunch after. and then her aunt would bring a snack bag, and in the bag, like, because there was no Sunday school. Like, you sat in there and listened to the whole thing, and so it was what snacks did she bring for all of us that time. And then, like, for Easter, my babysitter would take me to, like, their Easter services, me and my sister. And then we would come home, and then there would be, like, Easter eggs that my parents, like, had put out.
Oh, cute.
And so that was, like, my only real exposure to church. And then I had my Aunt Becky. We would go and spend lots of time there, and she was a big believer. And I remember distinctly her talking to me about Jesus, her talking to me about hell, and about how you don't want to go there. And so I remember being like 5 or 6 and asking for Jesus to be my friend forever, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talk about with the Power Kids, because I was afraid of hell, not because I knew him.
Sure.
Right? And it wasn't necessarily modeled in my home life in any capacity.
Okay.
So my mom, she had polycystic kidney disease. She was diagnosed with that. It's a hereditary disease. When she was like 24 or 25, she was pregnant with me when she was diagnosed. It's something that ran in her family. And so her mom passed away of this disease. All of her aunts and uncles and everyone passed away from this disease. And so she had a hard time with that.
Okay.
I used to call her a functional alcoholic because she could go to work and she could function in normal society. She could go to games and all of the things. And you would never know that she was drinking to the capacity that she was drinking every night. And so that's all I knew, you know, growing up. My parents loved me. They loved me, and my younger sister, but they also really loved, you know, they were raised in the 70s. Like, they really loved that, you know, partying lifestyle. And so I remember, you know, being at, on the weekends, we would just go to these parties that would be all night with, and so I grew up with these groups of friends that all went to Ripman because their parents all went to Ripman, and everybody grew up, and it was like this cycle, you know? And so I'm still friends with a lot of those people, and they, you know, all showed up when my mom got sick. Not to say that any of it was bad, but it's just I was exposed to things that a child shouldn't be exposed to.
You went to those parties with them, is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
So I, you know, I remember witnessing people doing drugs. I remember witnessing my parents get blackout drunk. Like, that was a regular occurrence in my life. One of my earliest memories as a child was my mom. I couldn't wake her. We were living in an apartment complex, and I couldn't wake her, and I was afraid she was dead, and I couldn't find my dad. And I was probably 3.5 or 4.
Oh, my gosh.
That was my, that's my earliest memory.
Yes, yeah, that one would stand.
And so I remember getting my sister out of bed and going and knocking on all of the doors in the apartment complex. It was a complex of 4 apartments. And finally, the last door I knocked on answered. And so they came up and said my mom wasn't dead, right? And then they called around and found my dad.
Wow.
And he was at a local bar. And, like, that, those are, you know, engraved in my brain.
Yeah, like those core memories that we don't want
right.
necessarily.
You know, and so that's hard. And I think that the, like, now, right, in hindsight, I think that my mom never dealt with her mom having this disease. I don't think my mom ever dealt with, she never, like, you know, sought counseling or therapy. Or, and I think the way that she self-medicated was by drinking. And she would get drunk every night. And that was the way that she coped. And it's just devastating from the context of, like, I'm a mom. And so I love coffee. I'd give up the sun, you know, if I could make good choices to be here for my kids and to increase, like, the longevity of my life. To watch them grow up and watch their children grow up, I would do anything. And so I think as a kid I had a really hard time with that. Like, how do you not choose to be well and to make what felt like to me easy lifestyle choices that could increase your, you know, longevity? Now, I know that everybody's called home when they're meant to be called home, and but I feel like her path was so dark and hard, and it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, you know.
There are a lot of choices along that pathway.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch when you're not in control of those choices
that and so,
people
and,
we love make.
Yeah. And I think I made a lot of dumb choices because I didn't really have a lot of rules. When your parents want to party as much as you do, I was doing things in high school that most kids do for the first time in college. So I was getting wasted on the weekends.
Wow. And did they just give you access and it wasn't a boundary? Okay.
Yep. There was no boundaries. Usually they were right there in the living room doing it with us, right? And so I had no boundaries. And I could do whatever I want, which put me into a lot of precarious situations that I had no business being in. And then I got into nursing school, which I think was my saving grace when I was young, because I spent most of my freshman and sophomore year of high school getting really drunk on the weekends. And then I knew if with my nursing program, if I got caught, that I'd be kicked out of the program.
So this is in high school you're doing a nursing program in high school. Okay.
And so it, like, never affected my, like, it never affected my schoolwork. I was a straight A student. Like, it,
hide it just like mom did,
right.
You know, functioning.
Well, and I wasn't even hiding it, really. Like, we were, you know, they knew I was going to this person's house and that we were getting, that we were drinking. Like, there was no hiding it. Like, they were well aware. or I would, they would give me a curfew, which was a joke, and I would come home, and they would be passed out drunk, and then I'd leave again, because there was no, boundaries, which is, like, my oldest is the age that I took my first drink of alcohol, and, like, that thought is, like...
Just completely blows your mind.
Blows my mind.
That the same age could have been the same space that you were in.
Oh, it's, like, crazy. So, I got into nursing school. I did an LPN program in high school.
Wow. I've never heard of that before. That sounds intense.
It was, but it was so good. So, it was at the, like, the Wayne County Career Center. They don't have a ton of them. And so, I was able to do that through high school. And at that point, I was also dating Tyler. And so, I think that probably helped. I mean, I would go out with his friends, but it was less... wild, I think, than what I was doing, like, when I was on my own. And so, yeah, I graduated high school, took my boards the next week, and passed my LPN boards, started working in a nursing home, which was not for me. I knew I wanted to work with kids. Like, I knew it. And so I found out that there was an LPN position posted at Children's. And the greasy wheat, like, that squeaky wheel gets the grease, isn't that the saying? So I called that nurse manager, I think, like, every couple of days for a month until she got me an interview. It was perfect. And then she hired me, which, like, I had no business getting hired there.
You're an 18-year-old nurse.
I was 18, could still be treated there as a patient.
Oh, my gosh.
And they hired me. Like, I would go to inpatient psych, and these kids were 17.
Oh, my gosh.
It was wild. Wild.
That's a gift.
I loved it so much. I was really lucky to be surrounded by, like, it was just such a great group of women. Like, it was such a great group of women. And I was the baby in comparison to the rest of them, right? So, like, when they were getting hired, they all had just graduated, like, their RN programs. And I was a baby who just graduated high school. And so they kind of, like, you know, tucked me under their wing. And it was just so... It was so good. I loved it so much. I loved it so much. And then, you know, those same women were with me. So Tyler was in a really bad ATV accident in 2011.
Okay.
So we already lived together. I moved out of high school. I moved out of my parents' house and moved in with Tyler's family a couple weeks after I graduated. I think Tyler's dad recognized that I was somebody that a little bit needed rescued and needed removed from the situation. And so because, you know, my mom was wonderful when she wasn't drinking, but when she was drinking, she usually got kind of mean. And so that usually presented in, you know, not nice text messages and name calling and things that were, I mean, just not who she normally was. And so... I think he knew I needed rescued. And so I lived with them for a couple of years. And then Tyler and I, because I was already a nurse, I was already earning a good job. I had a good job. We bought a house. I was 20.
Wow.
When we bought our first home. And he was a believer, but I still didn't know the Lord, right? So I didn't know then that I
did
was.
Did he grow up in the church? And that was like a part of his family DNA.
Yeah. Okay. So he went to, you know. Everywhere, like now it's Momentum, but then it was like I think BNYC or something. Like he traveled all over, going to youth conferences, and he went to the Grace Brethren in Rittman. That's where he grew up. That was where he did like youth group, and he calls it his like lost decade after like college, right? So he kind of like fell away, and he didn't come back until I came, and so I think I helped bring him home. But, yeah, so he was in this really terrible ATV accident. We didn't know if he was going to live.
Wow.
Spoiler alert, he lives.
About how old were you guys at that time?
I was, let's see, I was 21.
Okay.
21.
He's a couple years older.
Okay. And so I found out we were pregnant with Lila when he was in a medically induced coma.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's an emotional experience. Was. Both of those things are emotional experiences, and them on top of each other.
Yep. And I experienced the Lord's goodness through the whole thing. Like, when we talk about the peace that surpasses all understanding, like, I had it the entire time. It was never a question to me of whether or not he was going to make it. Like, I knew in my bones that he was going to be fine.
Had you met Jesus yet?
No.
At that point? You're still, okay.
I just knew.
Okay.
That is not where his story was ending, and that she was not going to be his legacy, and that mm-hmm. we had a lot of life to live. I just knew it. And so he proposed at our gender reveal party, which is so funny to think about now, in our kitchen in front of all of our friends and family, which was so special. And then we got married 6 months later. Lila was 3 months old. We kind of rushed in, like, we had been together for years, but we kind of rushed, like, the holy matrimony part of that mm-hmm. because we could not afford for him to have another major operation and him not be on my insurance because his insurance was not great. And so we just got buried alive mm-hmm. And medical debt. So, the community that, like, rallied around us was just so special during all of that. But, yeah, so we got married. And then pretty quickly have Lexi. They're 15 months apart. And through all of that, like, there was – I stopped going to RN school because he needed, like, a full-time nurse at home. So he, like, didn't even realize that I was pregnant until we were, like, home. Because he even says, like, he'll think about it now. And he was like, I didn't understand why you would wake up to get my medicine out of the refrigerator and you would throw up. Like, it didn't even comprehend that you were sick. Like, I kept thinking, like, why is she sick? Because I'm the one, like, that's mm-hmm. sick. Because he came home with, I mean, we had a hospital bed in our living room.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think because I was a nurse, they let him come home a lot sooner than they probably would have.
Yeah.
Or maybe they would have sent him to, like, a rehab facility. But I had all of those surgeons' mm-hmm. phone numbers on speed dial. So mm-hmm. if anything came up, they were so gracious, and, like, I would call them directly, and they would meet us in the ER or, mm-hmm. like, get us into an appointment the next day if it was something that they felt like they needed to
see.
Was
this, like, a really long healing journey for him?
Oh, yeah,
then
years.
Too?
Yeah. So he came home with a wound vac and an antibiotic line called a PIC line because we couldn't get his abdomen to close. The ATV crushed his abdomen, essentially. And so he had a grade 4 liver laceration. A grade 5 requires a transplant. So he had a grade 4. Mm. His spleen was just a grade 2, so that healed on its own. His gallbladder was lacerated completely off. I mean, they airlifted him from the scene to the hospital.
Was this just private, like he was hanging out with friends, or was
yep.
this, oh, wow.
Yep. And then because we weren't married, technically I didn't have any rights at the hospital, right? Even though we lived together and all of these things. But his parents were, I mean, so wonderful, and that was never – they went back to see him at first, and within, like, seconds, my father-in-law was out here, like, you need to get back here. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking it was August, and the residents change in July,
yeah.
right? So, like, these residents are brand new, and I just kept thinking, like, I cannot have an intern messing with him. Mm. Like, so I was like, who's in charge?
Yeah, taking charge.
And, like, you know, figured out who was – and it just so happened the head of trauma was there that night. It just – the Lord was in, mm-hmm. in all of those details. And so, yeah, his – the entire thing, oh gosh, like 3 years, 4 years, because he had an ileostomy too. That got reversed a year later, so that was like the big looming mm-hmm. surgery that he needed to have. And then he dealt with repeat abscesses in his abdomen that we could not figure out. And so Lexi was 2 weeks old in the ER for the first time with him. So we had a good few months where we didn't have to go in. And then he just kept getting this abdominal pain that we could not pinpoint. Mm-hmm. And it's just exhausting to, like, watch him struggle mm-hmm. and to not figure it out. And so you'd find an abscess, they'd put in a drain, then they'd put in a PIC line, and we'd do IV and antibiotics at home. And then the lines would come out, and, like, a week later he'd have the same pain. I'm like, this is not normal. Mm-hmm. And so after, like, 9 months of us, like, repetitively doing this, finally they were like, we cannot keep doing this, like, we're gonna open him up and figure out what's going on.
Whoa.
Which they did not want to do,
yeah,
because of his, like, trauma and the amount of scar tissue
high
and
risk.
Stuff that he had,
yeah.
But they, I'm glad that they did. So what they ended up finding was because they had such a hard time closing his abdominal wall, like those muscles, they had to use a special kind of run of stitches before they could, you know, suture together those muscle walls. Mm-hmm. And so one of those runs of stitches was underneath his liver. And so he, like, we call it, like, spitting a stitch. He, like, would get these stitches that would, like, weasel their way to the surface. And he'd just, like, sounds terrible, grab them with a hemostat and pull them out and clip them. Because then, like, the body would just, like, get rid of them. But this one, his body kept trying to get rid of, and it couldn't. And it's because it was stuck on the underside of his liver, which explained the pain he was in. And so once they got in there and they got it out, then he's been good ever since. So Lexi was, like, 9 months old, I think. It was his reversal surgery was in September, and they took him into the OR again that next April. And he has been really good since then.
Okay, so you just told me that there's this terrible accident, you're pregnant, you get married, you have a baby, he's healing, like, the major life changes all at once, you know, like, you might as well have changed your job, changed your house, like, every, you know, let's just pile it all on right here. So I'm imagining there's some emotional state, there's some anxieties that we're working through, both him, am I ever going to heal, am I going to be able to provide for my family, for my firstborn child, you, like, what's the emotions look like within all this?
I mean, I think I was in fight or flight. I don't think I really realized how much of a wreck I was until I rocked into Grace for the first time and kind of, like, released some of that. So, I mean, it's exhausting. Like, it's exhausting to watch the person you love endure all of this and, like, just desperately want to be better and not be better. And then here I am working. We were like ships passing in the night. So when he went back to work, I mean, because he knew he had to provide for us. So he went back to work with a PICC line in. Like, he had to get special permission to be able to go back to work with this line in because he was still getting antibiotics from home. Like, it just, fight or flight. And I just, you don't know what you're capable of handling until I think you're, like, really faced with it. So, we're figuring it out. We're young. We're babies.
Yeah.
We have two babies and a mortgage and all of this craziness. And then we got to, like, this sweet spot where, you know, things weren't as crazy and he was healing and we were still, like, passing ships in the night. I would work all of his off days. So he would stay home with the babies and I would go work a shift at the hospital. And so I was still working at least 2 days a week, 2 12-hour shifts a week. Through all of this, I took a leave of absence, like, with that, like, initial stage of the actual accident. And, like, those, I mean, my coworkers, like, they showed up in droves. I mean, whatever I need, just, they were so, so wonderful. And then we got on the other side of it. And so we have these two babies and, like, at that point, we're like, well, do we have another baby? Life had settled down for, like, a hot second, and I wasn't really sure, and Tyler actually pushed for number three. Because those first two, I say that the Lord planned. I didn't necessarily plan. So, you know, he planned those first two for us, and we are so thankful that we have them. And then that third baby, I was like, Tyler said, I would really love to be able to hold my brand-new baby and not be terrified that she's going to kick me in the stomach and it's going to hurt so bad. Like, how do you say no to that?
Like, have more joy in the journey of it.
Yeah, because he didn't get to enjoy them. You know, when they were little and there's nothing better than, like, posting up on the couch with, like, this little football of a baby. He couldn't do that comfortably, at least, because he was so, like, I mean, he had so much scar tissue. And with Lila, he had an ileostomy, so he was always terrified she was going to kick that. And, you know, that would be a mess. And you know, he couldn't enjoy them. And then we were in the hospital. I mean, oh gosh, the amount of time we were in the hospital with those brand new babies. Like, it got to the point where they would just give us a private room because they knew I was bringing in two small babies that they were I was breastfeeding. And so the hospital staff were always so wonderful to us. Like, sometimes he'd have to have, like, one night in a not private room, but they were always so quick to, like, get us into a private room. And, like, we just figured out how to live. They would give me bath blankets, like the thicker ones, and we'd make a bed on the ground for the kid, like the girls, to roll around on. And they would love, like, the lemon sponges that we would, like, clean his mouth with, like, to do mouth care. They would freeze them for me, and then they bring them in, and that would entertain the girls for so long.
Wow.
You know, it just, I don't know. I don't know. I still, like, it was.
You made it through all that.
It, like, was wild.
That's a lot.
And so then we had Lena, number three, and life was still, you know, it was still missing something. It was just, I felt like I was treading water, and I didn't really feel like I had a purpose. And the more babies I had, the more of the desire to know that, like, I did not want them raised in an environment that I was raised mm-hmm. in. And so I knew that we needed to do something else. And a lot of the women that I worked with at Children's, they don't even go to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of Christian women at Children's that recommended specifically Grace Church to us, to me,
mm-hmm.
is mind-blowing. Like, the Lord was using all of them to get me here.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the 5-year anniversary of Tyler's accident, I walked through the doors of Grace for the first time. Just me and the girls, because Tyler was at work.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan was here, and he was preaching. And, like, instantly locked eyes with me. Mm. And, like, knew that I was...
There was yes. pain. There was a story.
Just, you know, that was our first time. And got me over to the welcome desk and got me, you know, tied in. I got all of the kids off to childcare. And I sat in the very back row by myself, and he gave a sermon on doing things even when you're scared.
Mm.
And I was like, I know that this mm-hmm. was meant for me. I think we all kind of have those moments where, like, you're sitting down and you're like, the Lord is speaking directly yes. to me.
Yes.
And so officially then,
that
day, it was on August 21st, I gave my life to the Lord
in
that pew.
That day.
Well, not a pew. I mean, they're comfortable chairs, right? Sure. Sort of, in that aisle. And haven't looked back. Wow. So I was coming for a little while by myself, and then pretty quickly Tyler was like, he worked, his dad was his boss. And so he was like, I'm going to start going to church with you mm-hmm. on Sunday mornings. And Tim was like, that sounds great. We'll see you when you're done. And then that next, so that was in August, and then January... Jeff released the book, 5 Assumptions About God and Why mm-hmm. They're Wrong. And then they had a huge push at that point for life groups.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got tied into a life group and have never looked back. Now we are life group leaders. I co-lead CAP coming alongside postpartum, which is a wonderful thing that we do for postpartum moms mm-hmm. that we offer here. And it's just been so good. Like, I look at my oldest, especially, and think about the things that, like, I was exposed to already by her age.
Mm-hmm.
And she has never even seen me drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Not once.
What a different life you've given her.
What a different life. Like, we talk about, like, breaking cycles. Tyler, I don't necessarily think he had a cycle to break. Mm-hmm. Like, his parents raised him heavily involved in the church. And my father-in-law is a recovered alcoholic. So he has been recovered. Oh, gosh. I think that he stopped drinking when Tyler was born. So a really long time.
Yeah.
But he just, you know... They've, like, loved us so well through all of these different seasons, and I don't think that he had a cycle to break. I just think that he needed to be reminded of where he belongs
mm-hmm.
and, like, his role within our family and to be our leader and our shepherd, and he's the glue that holds us together.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be careful because I think I can notice some tendencies that was my mom's that, like, creep up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my natural inclination when I'm overwhelmed is to yell. I'm a yeller.
Okay.
I just yell. And, like, I remember her yelling. And sure. I remember hating her yelling at
yes.
me. And so sometimes, well, I have 6 children. So, you know,
there's more to... Yeah, you stepped at 3. I mean, I think we've got 3 L's. Oh, are they all L's?
They're all L's, yeah. Lila, Lexi, and Lena. I guess we did skip a little bit of time there, did we? Yes. So we have the 3 older girls, and then there's almost a 5-year age gap between Lena and our son, Graham. And he was such a surprise. We didn't find out what we were having. Mm-hmm. So that was crazy because I was pregnant with him when we unexpectedly lost my mom.
Oh, wow.
And so Tyler and I went away. Our gym would have like these, they called them the 3-3-0 retreat. So we went away to Punta Cana for a week.
Wow.
The kids stayed with my in-laws. No, they stayed with my Aunt Steph.
Mm-hmm.
She was like one, like she, my Aunt Steph is the reason I think I got through so much of my childhood kind of unscathed, because my parents would just drop us off there and they would just leave us there for long periods mm-hmm. of time. And so then I, like, even when she had kids, she trusted her kids with me. And so I would go and spend my entire summer there to just, like, escape a mm-hmm. little bit of the madness. Anyways, so my kids stayed with her and we went away. And then we came home and I had been home, I don't know, maybe 6 hours, and was in the ER with my mom overnight. She called me and said that she didn't have, her foot was blue. Mm. She couldn't feel her foot. And at this point, she had gotten sober because she was in end-stage renal failure. And so our relationship got significantly better. Now I'm backtracking. I'm really sorry. Our relationship got significantly better when she stopped drinking.
Okay.
I can imagine. She actually had, because I knew I didn't want my kids raised in an environment like I was raised in, and I knew I didn't want my children exposed to people screaming at one another, and that's the way that they communicated. They couldn't just, like, have a conversation. It was always, like, belittling each other. Mm. It just seemed like they shouldn't have been together. Like, they just, like, that's what I remember growing up feeling. Yeah. Like, they should just get divorced because this is not healthy.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want my kids over there because I didn't want them exposed to that. I didn't want them to see, to think that that was normal behavior or, like, that's how you're supposed to speak to your partner. That's not what it should look like. Mm-hmm. And so, and I knew all that. And so I didn't let them. And so my oldest didn't really have a very strong relationship with my mom in any capacity. My second, so Lexi, she was maybe 3 when finally she started dialysis, which made her get sober.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was home because she couldn't work on dialysis. And so she had a great relationship with my mom. My mom would go pick her up from school and take her out to lunch.
Wow.
And then she had a pretty good relationship with Lena, too. I just think that, you know, when they're, like, tiny in those formative years, like, there's a comfortability that gets built. And I don't think Lila ever had that comfortability mm-hmm. built.
I understand that, yeah.
And so the other two did, though. And so they really, you know, they would go and spend, like, while my dad was at work, they would go spend a couple hours at Mimi's mm-hmm. and they would hang out. And when we were all together, it was fine. You know, we had family dinners and mm-hmm. Christmas dinner and all of the things. And she was always so accommodating. My mom was always so accommodating to recognize that, like, we're trying to build this life together
mm-hmm.
and also be, you know, mindful of Tyler's family and
mm-hmm.
what does that look like. And she was always so wonderful with all of that. And our relationship did get so much better when she was sober.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyways, so then we go on this trip and we come home and she tells me her foot is blue and she had been having some issues with flow in her lower half of her body with clots. And so she had already had a stent placed a few months prior to that. But the problem was that the stent was placed in the other leg.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a different leg. I was 16 weeks pregnant with Graham in the ER overnight with her. And it all just got so bad so fast. So they admit her and they put her on blood thinners. She's in a ton of pain because she's in pain. Hurting people hurt people. So she was really awful to the staff. At that point, I hadn't seen the girls in, I don't know, 8 days or something mm-hmm. wild. And so I was like, I just need to spend a couple hours with my girls. So I left the hospital, and then I get a panicked phone call that they're taking her to emergency surgery. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly find somewhere for the girls to go so that I can get back up to the hospital. And it was like this for days. Just every time you think something was better, we'd get waylaid with more bad news. Mm-hmm. And so I was finally at my friend's house with the girls because it was close. She lived in Stowe. Mm-hmm. So I could be at the hospital very fast if I needed to. Still just trying to, like, just carve out a couple of hours just to, like, be with my girls. And I got a call from my sister that the providers were in the room talking about doing a left leg amputation on my mom. Wow. And that I needed to get back to the hospital. And as I'm walking through the doors of the hospital, I hear a code blue called in her room number. And I was like, oh my gosh, my mom is dying. So I go, couldn't remember. I've been to Asuma Hospital. The place is like ingrained in my DNA. Couldn't remember how to get to the unit. Mm. Like, and then I was like, wait, how do I get here? Mm-hmm.
And you know every implication of code blue. Like someone like me, I'm like, interesting. That's like, you know, at Kmart, like the, I don't know. Yes. But you know what that means.
Yes. And so, yep, they got her back. She went into what we figured out was respiratory distress or respiratory failure. She stopped breathing, but she still had a pulse because when they went to do compressions, she grabbed their hands. Can you imagine being the provider, the nurse getting ready to do compressions and having the patient that you think is totally out grabbing your hands?
Wow.
Just those poor nurses. But so she was really sick. They intubated her, got her over to the ICU, the same ICU that Tyler was in that saved his life. Like, wow. The full circle. Just,
was this triggering for you? Was that hard to be in?
Yeah. Well, I didn't leave when Tyler was in the hospital. I slept on a 2-seat love seat that's not comfortable every single night that he was intubated. I did not leave the hospital. Mm-hmm. For weeks. We lived in that waiting room. Mm. And so this was like that all over again. And so she was intubated. She was in really bad shape. She was really sick. And then she looked a little better. And suddenly she didn't have acidosis anymore. And the stuff in her blood looked better. And suddenly she was breathing on her own again. And so after all night where they finally got her stabilized, my sister and I slept at the bedside and my dad went home. They're talking at like 4 o'clock in the morning that they were going to extubate her and take her the breathing tube out. Thinking that, like, this is, we're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. We weren't getting anywhere. And so, they come around for rounds, and I'm listening to them give report on her. They do, like, a multi-system round. And so I hear them saying, like, well, she's in respiratory failure. Her liver enzymes are elevated. She's in kidney failure. She's in this. And I'm doing the math, and I'm like, she's in multi-system organ failure, and no one is telling us. Mm. No one is coming out and, like, plainly saying, this is where we're at.
Right, yeah.
No one said that. And so I'm listening to all this. I'm the only person in the room that has any kind of medical knowledge.
Translate, yeah.
And I just, when they were done, I told my sister and my dad, like, I was just going to go out and talk to them for a minute. I go into the hallway and I shut the door and I look at the nurse practitioner in the face and I say, I cannot be the one that tells them she's dying. Mm-hmm. That cannot come from me. Someone needs to go in there and tell them that she is dying because she's dying, right? Like, that's where we're at. Like, I need to get my kids up here because she is dying and it is going fast. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes, you need to get your kids up here right away. And so, and at that point when they, like, confirmed, I was ready to just hit my knees. And so the nurse that was there was so great, and she's like, you do not lose it right here. Mm. You do not lose it right here. And so she gets the keys, and she takes me into a private room, the same private room where we had multiple conversations with Tyler's providers when he was sick. And I hit my knees. And I prayed that the Lord's will be done because I knew she was going. And I listened to Hills in the Valleys because I knew, like, that this was it.
Yeah.
And then my next call was to Joe. Because, you know, they're some of our best friends. Joe and Mandy are some of our dearest and best friends. And I needed someone to verify that she was a Christian. Mm-hmm. That wasn't me. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know at that point that I could even have the conversation.
Yeah.
And so we made the plan. He came up and talked to her. while we had a family meeting because, mm-hmm. again, I was like, I cannot come from me that she's dying. Cannot come from me. And so we had a family meeting, and they were, my, you know, dad and sister were still in denial about what was happening because...
You don't want
because
that.
Because when you looked at her, you thought, well, she kind of looks better, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's off the breathing machine, and she's talking to us, mm-hmm. and she knows who we are, and... She was, like, already, at that point, already had, like, agonal breathing. Like, she was already so sick. And so then I had the conversation with my mom, like, Mom, if you stop breathing again, do you want them to put the tube back in? Like, is that what you want?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want us to do compressions? Like, mm-hmm. we will, at that point, they were talking about, she had lost all the blood flow to her legs. So at that point, best case scenario, we were looking at a above the hip amputation on her left leg. She lived the rest of her life in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and she just looked at me and she said, I can't go yet.
Mm.
Bree's getting married and you're having another baby and I can't go yet. And I said, I know you don't want to go, but I'm telling you, like, if you're all done fighting and you're tired and you want to go home, I'm telling you, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can go home. And she said yes, that she didn't want us to do anything extraordinary to save her life. This was at, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She went unresponsive by, like, 8 p.m. and was gone before midnight.
Wow.
Like, it was... And she went from, like, being extubated at 4 o'clock in the morning to, mm-hmm. like, not full, totally gone within... Mm-hmm. Before we even hit the 24-hour mark. And I felt like even through that whole thing, like, I didn't necessarily get to grieve her death because I was so busy trying to fix everything.
Mm.
Because they didn't have a will, and my dad didn't know when their bills were due or anything. Nothing. Had no idea. So I had to figure it all out. And I lived the closest, and my sister tries to be helpful, but it's hard. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I had to fix... had to fix it. And so I even got to the end of that and I was like, I don't even know that I ever fully grieved her passing.
Which is what you said about her with her own mother.
Yeah.
You know, that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
And it sticks. That can get sticky and muddy inside if you're not grieving.
Yeah. And then in the same breath, like, I had joy. Like, I had 3 tiny humans that still relied on me every day to get out of bed and to love them well. And the difference is that I have a hope within me,
mm-hmm.
because of Jesus.
Yes.
And so I can look at something like that happening, and yes, it's sad, and I miss my mom every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I can look at it with an eternity mindset because now I live with 1 foot in heaven and 1 foot here.
Mm-hmm.
It's about eternity. Like, what are we doing now that's going to impact eternity?
Yes.
Like, this life is a vapor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we doing that's going to impact eternity? Like, we just, so fast. And I can look at the whole thing and have hope and joy in my life still because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Because he already paid it all for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know exactly where my mom is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can find joy still, and I can still have hope in my life, and I can still love my children well and do all of the things because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's different than the way that even the way that my dad grieved, because I don't know that he fully knows Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had conversations and he says he believes, but he doesn't follow the Lord, mm-hmm. right? He doesn't have a relationship with Jesus.
Right. Full,
and so for
full
him,
surrender.
Yeah. It was like, you know, he was really in the depths, and he kept asking me, like, I just don't understand how you can, like, just be functional because of Jesus.
Yes.
It's the only way. It's the only way, because of Jesus. And then we lost her, and then we had Graham. He was a surprise boy, which was just magic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tyler was like, well, there's no point to find out because I'm certain that this is another girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, like, couldn't even form the words to tell me it was a boy. Because he was just, like, so
delighted.
Just so shocked.
Oh, what a joy to, like, see your son in that way, in that moment, with that surprise.
Yeah, and then there was, like, a wink from my mom. He weighed the exact same weight that I weighed as a baby. I just felt like that was, like, just such a nice little gift that they gave me. I was like, oh, you were just spending time up there with Mimi. You know, and then, yeah, wild. And right before that, we bought a new house, right before we had Graham, and thankfully right before the crazy of COVID. So we got our house really good in comparison to what houses are going for right now. And then I homeschooled them for a year because of COVID, which was also, like, scary and, you know, awful, but at the same time, like, what a blessing. I taught Lila third grade and Lexi first grade and pre-K to Lena with this six-month-old baby. Graham didn't even know what it was like to not have siblings around. He was, like, one and a half by the time they went back to school.
Wow.
We were just together.
It's just precious time.
I mean, we were just together, and it was so magical. I would continue to homeschool, but they said no.
Oh, really?
And then, you know, at that point, we had so many babies, four, and Lila, she was so hilarious. She's like, I just, like, who's going to play with him? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, you know, when he's 10, Lena is going to be 15. Who is going to play with him? And I was like, that is a really good question. Who is going to play with him? And this whole time, I didn't necessarily feel complete in our family. And so so then we had Beckham.
Oh, my gosh.
And he is now 3, and he is so funny in every bit of 3 that one person could be. You just never know if you're going to get sweet or salty, you know, you just 3-year-olds, you're really just
on your toes,
rolling the dice every time. You never know. And then even through him, like, I just didn't know. I hung up my stethoscope. I stopped working at Children's when I was pregnant with Beckham. And I felt like I was being called to something else. I had such a magical birth with Graham. I went natural, and it was just like an out-of-body experience. It was heaven. I wasn't a believer when I was pregnant with the girls. And it was a different experience as a believer.
Okay.
Heaven has never felt so close.
Whoa.
As when you're welcoming a baby. And to be able to, like, worship and feel him kicking. And, like, once he was here, to play the songs that we would listen to on repeat and to have that instantly calm him. Like, that's... It was
God's loving kindness.
Oh my gosh. It was so, pregnancy as a believer was just something else. The wonder of it all, and, like, the goodness and the way that he made us, how uniquely he made women to have babies, and the way he designed us perfectly for it. It just, having a natural birth, being surrounded by empowering people, and Tyler was just... So I knew I felt like I was being called to something else. And so I actually did a doula program.
Okay. That fits so well for everything you just explained.
Thank you. Yeah. So I did that. I didn't know I was pregnant with Beckham. Did that class. And then 2 weeks later found out we were expecting him. And so I didn't do anything with it for a hot second. Hung up my stethoscope. Had Beck. And then had an old client, old coworker reach out and was like, I remember you told me you were doing this. I don't care if I'm your first client. Like, I want to be there. I want you to be there. Come and, you know, love me and support me through it. And so she was my first client, and it has been full tilt ever since. Wow. So now I'm a doula, which is funny because, you know, you're on call for birth, which is wild with 6 kids. But I just, like, my entire time, my mentality about it has been, if this is what I'm being called to do, I cannot do this alone, and Jesus is going to have to put the pieces in place. Like, nothing is, no detail is too far out of his, his reach,
right? Yeah, and you're so, called into this space.
If this is what you want me to do, I need you to put the pieces in place. I need you to go before me, and I need you to make it easy. And so when I say that every time it has been a no-brainer, every time. Easy childcare, kids usually being fine, or Tyler already on his way home from work, usually walking through the door, like, every single time. I mean, I don't know how easy it's been for the people that have had the kids, but
they might have a different
for
story.
For me, it has felt
natural, easy. Smooth, yes. Like it's ordained.
Yes, mm-hmm. Like, and if I'm supposed to be there, he's going to put the pieces in place mm-hmm. for me to be there. And then I didn't necessarily feel done, and so there was lots of conversations about, like, well, if we have another baby, like, who do you envision that baby to be? And we both felt like we were missing a little girl.
Mm.
And so Lucy Joy
came,
and she is a joy. Like, her middle name is her entire being. Mm. She is the most delightful baby. Mm. So she'll be 2 in June, and she is just wonderful. Took off a little time doing birth work, obviously, mm-hmm. when I was having – I took, like, 6 months off after I had her. I had a – her birth, it was wild. And then I got sick after she was born, and mm-hmm. so I was in and out of the hospital for a hot second. I accidentally gave birth to her in the lobby of the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Standing up in front of same-day surgery at Suma.
Tia! There is more to that story. Oh, my gosh, it doesn't happen every day.
No, it was, like, so dumb. Like, I just –
like, I got this.
I mean, right. Well, you would think – yeah, you would think that because this is what I do for a living, I would know the
signs. Don't
put
that on your resume.
Right, know the signs of what's about to happen. No, the things that I was, like, so intentionally praying about, I had, like, with Beckham, he was my longest labor, which is wild because he's number 5. You expected to be mm-hmm. fast, and it wasn't fast. My water broke at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was born at, like, 6 o'clock at night. Which is still not a long labor. I recognize that.
A lot of women out there are tapping their toes. Wait a minute. That's only 12 hours.
But labor didn't start. I needed a lot of Pitocin, like, to get us into active labor. And then I went from 6 centimeters to a baby in my arms in 11 minutes, that's really fast and a lot for your body to go through. And so there's, like, this moment of, like, what just happened to me?
Yeah.
And so that was just wild. And then so for Lucy, like, leading up to her birth, there were, like, very specific things that I had been praying about. I didn't want my water to break. I wanted my labor to start on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted contractions to start on their own. I did not want labor, like, my water breaking to be the thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted her transition because of being a doula and being in birth work. Like, I know that you can go slow. I know that you don't have to, like, vigorously rub mm-hmm. these babies and they can have a minute, like, mm-hmm. to transition, and it doesn't have to be this. You can still have a hospital birth and have it be a calm and mm-hmm. quiet and, you know, like, euphoric environment. It doesn't have mm-hmm. to be chaos. And Beckham's felt like chaos because my provider didn't make it. And so a first-year resident delivered him, and they pulled a midwife from the hallway because she didn't know what to do. And I was like, there has to be better options than this.
Mm-hmm.
So I made intentional decisions. I switched providers. I was, you know, I had the same providers with all 5 of the babies. I switched to a new provider. And I just was so intentional about the things I was praying for. I wanted to announce the baby's gender. I did ask for it to go fast. Lord was gracious. It was fast. You know, I didn't want my water to break. And so it was just like a regular night at home. Kids had volleyball. Lila had volleyball camp with the high schoolers in the evening. So I picked her up at 8:30 and was, like, complaining in the parking lot about how I was still pregnant. Like, can you believe it? 41 mm-hmm. weeks today. Like, what the heck's going on? Why am I still pregnant? Feeling totally fine. Sat there, painted everybody's nails for, like, people were going on vacation and Bible camp and all the mm-hmm. things. So, yeah. Felt totally fine. Called Tyler because I started having a couple of contractions that, like, took note. And he was going to get his haircut. And I was like, well, you could still just go ahead and get your haircut. I'm going to get everybody ready for bed mm-hmm. over here. And so then I noticed things were, like, a little more consistent but not strong. Like, nothing to write home about. And I tell people, you do not go to the hospital until they take all of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
If you can walk and talk through them, it's not the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the entire time I'm putting these people to bed, it's not the real thing. I'm just, like, totally in denial. Lay down, put Beckham to bed. Everybody senses that something's going on. Nobody wants to sleep. Beckham, like, walks into the door frame, ends up with a goose egg, is hysterically mm-hmm. sobbing. I'm like, I just wanted a calm
mm-hmm.
bedtime. And so I told Tyler to call his mom and just have her sleep over. This entire time I'm thinking, I'm going to bed, mm-hmm. and I'm going to wake up in active labor. So I lay down, and I get Beckham to bed, and I lay down by Graham, and I have a contraction so strong that I, like, have to hum my way through it. And I was like, okay, this is, like, things are picking up. Like, this is good. It's 10:30 at night. I get up, I go to the restroom, and I have another one still okay. And I was messaging my doula, and I was like, you know, when my mother-in-law gets here, we'll probably just go ahead and head to the hospital. I needed antibiotics because I was GBS positive. And I said, we'll just go in so I can get my two rounds of antibiotics. I needed at least 4 hours to get both doses. She's like, okay, let me know when you're leaving for the hospital. I said, okay. We pulled out of our driveway at 10:57. When I stood up to wash my hands, I had a contraction so strong my jaw chattered. And for me, that means I'm in transition. Mm-hmm. And I know this about myself. So I know that I am a lot further along than I thought I was. By the time I get to the bottom of the stairs, I have another one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so the whole time I'm just praying that I make it to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Call my doula. I feel like pushing. She's like, get inside. I'll have them. So she just so happened to get the midwife's phone number that night. She didn't even have this midwife's phone number. The midwife comes flying up to meet me. She's like, well, sit down and we'll get you upstairs. And I was like, I can't sit down. She's like, that's okay. It's okay. You're safe. I've got you. If you're ready to have this baby, let's go. I can catch your baby anywhere. Like, I've got you. Let's do it. That was it. That's all I needed to hear. She was literally born like 10 seconds later. I had been in the hospital for 3 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
She was born at 11:17.
Wow.
Wow. But, like, her exposure was nothing because my water broke so, mm-hmm. like, right as she was delivering. I announced her gender. The lights were dim. My midwife was the only one that was there that caught her. There was no residents and nurses all in my business. Like, I caught her. I wanted to catch her. I brought her to my chest. All the things that, like, I had really, mm-hmm. my voice is what she heard first. Mm-hmm. All of the things that I was, like, so intentionally praying about all happened.
In the lobby of the hospital.
In the lobby of the hospital.
Hey, listen, you got what you wanted.
I did.
Next time, if you go for 7, maybe be a little more specific about the location when you're praying.
Or the timing. Can you give me like a 45-minute window instead of, what, 20 that we're doing this?
That's so funny.
So wild. But and so she's just a delight. And
now you complete?
I think so. I think so. Yeah. I mean, 6 kids is a lot of kids.
It Audrey. Is. The
life.
Kids.
Life is crazy and full and beautiful and messy and chaotic. You know, you're not going to come over and have, like, a quiet meal at our house. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have it any other way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just special. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, beauty in the chaos and every single one of my children know who Jesus is, even Lucy. Mm. You know, when we put on worship music, she is singing with us. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even have that many words. Mm-hmm. And she is praising the Lord in her gibberish. And we're doing it different. And I'm so freaking thankful.
Yeah. The thing I'm seeing, hearing, feeling, sensing is just that joy. You were talking about how you didn't want the environment in the childhood home that you had, but your, like, even just the brightness within your face, within everything you're bringing here in this conversation is the joy that your home is known for that was not what you had as a child that you want to give to your kids. And they feel that. They receive that and they live in it.
I hope so. I hope that if you would ask any of them that that's what they feel. Mm-hmm. Because that's what they bring us, joy, immense joy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So people are healed. People are good now. Are you in a stable time? Like, it's been such a roller coaster.
Yes. Yeah. Tyler is good and has been healthy for a really long time. And, you know, here's the thing. We never know what's coming next, right? And as believers, we know that there are going to be trials. And we've had some pretty deep valleys in our life. You know, we have walked through hard seasons in our marriage and dealt with death and, you know, all of these things. And so sometimes those valleys can feel so deep. But Jesus is in it with us.
Yes, you're not alone.
And so, you know, I think that if that is the truth that you can hold on to, is that even they're going to come, like hard times are going to come.
Yeah.
How do you handle them when they come?
Because you can still have joy.
You can still
That's not impacted by our circumstances. Happiness is impacted by our circumstance, but joy, yeah. contentment, even in the hard things. Turns out it's the key to everything,
I heard. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I'd like to actually just hear a little bit more about the, you called it CAP. What are those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So CAP stands, it's like our short way of saying coming alongside postpartum.
And this is a community at Grace.
Yes.
That you can be participating. So I would just love for anybody that might be relating over hard births or multiple kids or no kids or anything along yeah. those lines, if there's a way they can connect with you.
Yeah. So, Kara, reached out to me a few years ago and was like, I feel like this is what I'm being called to do. If I want to start a postpartum support group at Grace, how do I do that? And so I connected her to Robbie, and she was like, but I want you to come alongside me with it. And so, which was perfect timing because I had just experienced a traumatic, I mean, Lucy's birth wasn't traumatic, but like I got sick, I had retained placenta and was admitted in the hospital with sepsis and was really sick there for a hot second. And so she was 3 months old when we launched this. And so I was in the thick of being postpartum with these women. And so it stands for coming alongside postpartum. It is specifically geared towards postpartum women. We say birth to two. We have some women who show up like at the end of their pregnancies just to kind of like get the feel of things before, you know, they have their babies. And then we have childcare for older siblings, which is so massive because it's hard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, and even for me, for me to be able to come and help, I needed somewhere for Beckham to go. And so it is a community group at Grace. It's unique from the context that you don't have to go to Grace to be a part of it. And so you can find it on the website. We are currently in a session now. It goes until the end of May. And then we usually meet like every other week or so in the summer to just kind of keep those rhythms and to make sure that no one falls through the cracks.
Sure.
Because postpartum is sanctifying and beautiful and also scary, and we just want to make sure that no one falls through the cracks.
Absolutely.
And then when we're going, we're going. And so we meet every week on Wednesdays from 10 to noon. We have snacks and we talk about different aspects of postpartum. So from baby blues to anxiety to, I mean, everything. How to initiate solids for your babies. How to sleep. What do you do about sleep? You know, none of us have all of the answers. But, like, you know, to have a community of women who are all walking through the exact same thing is so unique and beautiful. And then to see it come full circle and see them making friends and like reaching out to one another for support is, I mean, it's magic.
Yeah.
Like the Lord is moving in such a massive way in this collection of women. And then, and even now, like we had some moms that started with us who are having second babies right now. And so just to kind of continue to see it come full circle. And then in every single one, we relate back to Jesus. And so even if these women are showing up who don't know the Lord, they are getting their seeds planted and watered by us every week to know that there is hope and there is joy and that they're not alone. And so it has been such a gift. So there's four of us that lead it, Bobby, Brianna, Kara, and I, and we all rally around one another. Like we were out, we were really sick a few weeks ago, and so I missed like 3 weeks in a row because I had sick kids at home. And they had it, right? And it's, oh, it's so.
That's the picture of a community like that. We got you. You're going to be fine. Do what you need to do. Focus on what you need to focus on. One of my pro mom tips, if you're able, is to have kids with all of your friends at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not able to do that, find a community of people who are having kids. And after the fact, become connected with them. Because same thing. Like, you have the person that's 3 months before you, 3 months behind you. And they're teething. Okay, I need to be ready for teething. And then you're telling somebody else about teething and just having those gifts, which a lot of times in my in this world, this realm that you and I are in, is through our life groups, through our community groups, and the different spaces that we can step into at Grace and have that community with like seasoned people.
Yes, so. And if they don't, if they're not a part of Grace and they're not a part of those communities, we want to make sure that they feel community with us.
Yes,
and it has been for that. It's been really, really great.
Oh, well, thank you for doing that. And I know that you're willing, if people are in need of conversation with you, that something's stirring up for them between all the different things you talked about with family stressors and childhood wounds and childbirth or anything in between, please reach out to us. We have an email, unscripted@graceohio.org, and we can get you in touch with Tia, and she's happy to speak with anybody or join the group, go to the weekly, find you know the programs and the classes that we have to get connected with.
Yeah, we would love to have you.
Yes, wonderful. Now, as you know, we have a playlist for Grace Unscripted, the Unscripted Worship Playlist on Spotify, and we ask every guest to add a song. I feel like I might know what your song might be, but do you have one selected to add to the playlist?
I do have one, but I'm curious to hear what you think.
Hills and Valleys.
Oh, I mean, that is a good one.
I've been humming it in my head this whole time you've been talking.
Actually, I would say it's been Gratitude by Brandon Lake.
Ah, beautiful.
That has been like my anthem for the last several years. Mm-hmm. And while Hills and Valleys is a special song, for me, mostly I relate that now to the passing of my mom. And so while
it's hard
to
hear.
Special. Mm-hmm. Because we had them play it at her service. Mm-hmm. It wasn't maybe the current anthem of my life, which is gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Just gratitude for the Lord and everything that he's doing and working in us and through us.
Mm-hmm. I love to sing that one. You know, like, we got to make sure the sound's up real loud so you can't hear my voice necessarily, but you can still pretend like you're Brandon Lake.
Yes, that's right. Right now, my kids are all about Josiah Queen, so all of his songs have been blasting in the house. But yes, I really do love me some Brandon Lake.
That sounds amazing, dancing with your kids and your little two-year-old worshiping.
Yes, worshiping Jesus. So like, to hear her in the back seat singing along is, I mean, it's special. Like, it's so
precious.
Special.
So precious.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing your story, pieces of yourself with us. And, you know, if you're listening to this, and again, if you want to connect with her, but also share it with somebody maybe you're thinking of right now, if there's somebody that connects with those pieces that she has shared with us, we'd love for anyone to hear this story. Thanks so much for bringing it to us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.